First, I would like to thank the organizers giving me the opportunity to give a talk here. And so what I can talk about is the measuring barrier curvature by angles of photon emissions in spin orbital coupled systems. The title is kind of misleading because I want to put more sexy to attract more people to listen to. It's not not exactly, but the physics is reflected in actually is a similar kind of physics, better coverage for the spin hole effect. So my name is Champion. So I'm not a lie. So the paper actually was published. This work was done together with Domlai Forms group at the at Fudan University. He's an experiment, and he was a former ZX Chen's student. 2 years ago, he moved back to China, set up his lab. And now, actually, 2 weeks ago, he went to Stanford to do the experiment. So I don't have the data yet. So we hope can locate them after a couple. So the work also related, early work with Bojan. Oh, it was Andrew Bernovic and Kanjun, who is a postdoc here, RDP. Bernovic is a student. And if I have time, actually, I can also mention some numerical calculations which are done together with my student and a collaborator in the Institute of Physics at China this summer about the spin accumulation induced by the confined potential under the boundaries. Actually, that case also leading to some spin accumulation boundaries like spin hole effect. So when you measure the spin accumulation and say this is spin hole effect, you should be more careful to consider this effect. So the outline, I will give a brief motivation, and so far the barrier phase in the momentum space in the spin orbital coupled system, and I will briefly describe the angle resolved photo emission technique, and the effect I'm looking actually is the dichroism effect due to electric field observed in the angle resolved photo emission. And finally, if I'm trying to talk about spin accumulation by these confinement potentials. So spin orbital coupling is a relativistic effect and has been discussed, I mean, in this workshop, I think, many times. So the interesting thing is like you consider solid state physics where you have band structure so far. In semiconductor, these three important spin orbital coupling terms. The first one is Rochebe spin orbital coupling, which is due to the asymmetry of the confinement potential in the third direction. And also the Dresselhaus spin orbital coupling, which is due to the breaking the inverse symmetry in the material. And the third one is in the valence band of the semiconductor. So actually, it's a bulk property. So you have a spin 3/2 system. And so these spin orbital coupling systems, when you look, when the spin orbital coupling is very, very strong, actually, we know it leads to band split. So in that case, when you consider the effective Hamiltonian in each band, actually this the nice description is say that each band, inside each band, if this effective potential actually you must have include to some barrier phase term. That can be described in like in this model. So you have a spin orbital coupling and you want to diagonalize the spin orbital coupling term, go to each band, so plus or minus band. So if you have a potential V, and this X here actually is going to describe by D is a covariant derivative now because the momentum space, and you have to induce this Berry phase, and which is non-trivial, and this kind of thing happen when you write down this in the effective Hamiltonian. And in that case, actually, you can show that it's going to lead to the semi-classical formula, which has to include this Berry curvature term here. And this kind of formula then has been proposed to explain the anomalous Hall effect, which by Alan McDonald here. So this is one of the consequence of this Berry curvature in the due to spin orbital coupling. So another one is also proposed, which by Murakami and Nagosa Shujin, which are about this intrinsic spin Hall current in the Luttinger model. In that case, you say that basically you apply electric field in one direction, and the spin current. Last week, Joe Moore, Joe already talked about the spin current, and actually is a tensor, and which is connected by topological this Berry curvature term. And since this thing does not break a time reversal symmetry, so this current actually is dissipationless. So we, as this has been talking about last few years. So the idea here is actually I'll try to think about it whether we can direct the probe as a Berry curvature in this spin orbital coupling system where you actually project each band. So as I described here, actually the Berry curvature is sort of effective and intermediate concept to describing the physics, because we have to project each band. If you just write down as a matrix model, actually, if you include all the band, this Berry curvature is in that sense is not exist. So in full band, if actually this Berry curvature is reflected to reflected in the band mixing when you apply the electric field. And so in order to detect this kind of Berry curvature effect, since the Berry curvature is a function of momentum, so the anomalous Hall effect actually is you have to take the integral of this Berry curvature. So it's a total topological quantity. But if you want to direct probe this curvature, you have to, since it's a function in the momentum space, so you have to some experimental technique to measure in each momentum space. So the angles of photo emission so far, I think, is a unique, not unique, but in the single particle case, I think maybe unique, is probing the signal which in both has momentum and energy resolution in both. So this is some way consider whether this can be taken to measure this Berry curvature effect. So let's look at the idea whether we can probe this Berry curvature. So the Berry curvature is comes from this actual adiabatic approximation. So basically, say when you apply the electric field, splitting gap is bigger than the electric field energy produced by electric energy. So you have a Hamiltonian which has spin orbital coupling, and you have apply electric field. And in here, I just do a kind of different time-dependent gauge which you put the electric field inside of the momentum. And in that case, if you adiabatic approximation is valid, I'm going to use the instantaneous Eigen state. So to diagonalize the Hamiltonian, but the wave function here, shooting a wave function, solution is not an instantaneous Eigen state. So the real solution of the Schrodinger equation actually, due to the electric field, there's a mixing between the these two bands. So if you look at one band here, let's say the first band, in fact there is this turn will come in. So this wave function of this band actually is modified, and which is if you keep the leading order, is basically a proportional E dot this B vector. And this B vector, in fact, is related to the Berry curvature, which you will show is also divergence in the band crossing point. So the question is here is whether we can probe this B vector in the angles of photo emission. So the angles of photo emission actually is very simple technique in some sense. Is you use a very high energy photon, and you came into the material, you immediately knock out the electron. So you so what do you think about the knockout electron is exactly in the state which the knockout electron will keep the main information in the when he is inside this material. And so you have two conservation laws. One is energy, so you can measure the energy of the coming out electron. And the second one actually is the momentum in the plane is conserved in that process because it's very fast. You kick it, immediately kick the electron. So that's two things you can measure. So you can measure the angle of the electron from the detector. So now this detector is like circling there, so you can measure all these angles and just by one shot. And you can, it's a very powerful technique now. So the RPS actually got a, lasted like 10 years to get dramatically improved. So this dramatically improved is due to the actual high DC superconductor study. And the energy resolution now, even sometimes they told me it's like even 1 MeV, they almost can resolve. I looked at just like 2 MeV here. So, and they have very high angle resolution, also 0.1 angle degree. So it's very, very good. You can, it's like 10 years ago, 2 MeV or 20 MeV, so it's one magnitude higher. So, and also another thing is I want to mention is that even weak dark collider effect can be detected. So far in high temperature superconductors, Argan's group claims they actually, there's a paper, they claim they measure this weak dark collision effect, but experiment in Europe, I think it does not confirm that. But at least the case is the weak dark collision effect in now modern RPS you can measure. So dark collision effect, usually we have this magnetic dark collision effect people may be familiar with, which is basically probing the time reversal symmetry in the breaking in the material. And for example, in the ferromagnetic material, you have this dark collision effect, and also in superconductor, this in high temperature superconductors, actually all these exotic state. Not some people think it's not that exotic, like orbital current phase and ion superconductor. If they are existed, they are breaking the time reversal symmetry, so and they should be see some dark collision effect. So this is due to time reversal symmetry. But here, to probe that kind of B factor here, actually, if you have electric field and plus spin orbital coupling, and this also can be leading to the dark crazy effect in each band. And here we don't have time reversal symmetry breaking, and so I think the physics can be considered as this stems from this period curvature.
Can you please remind what
is dark crazy? Oh, so dark crazy means you have left polarized circular light coming and right circular light coming. The difference between them. So you measure two signals which you have a right circularized polarized light. And then you are using left circular polarized light, you measure again the difference between them called dark crazy.
So you have the difference between the electric and
yeah.
Susceptibilities for left hand and right hand
light. So here where we measure the intensity of the coming out of electron. In the angle. So you have left polarized light coming, knock out the electron, and you use left polarized light, knock out the electron, and then you measure the difference. Okay. So this is
the difference in what?
In whatever you detect your electron, you have to detect how much electron coming out. Right,
the
emission of the electron. Yeah, intensity, total count of the electron. Intensity, so.
So is it a Bark constant or Bark constant?
What?
Is it a Bark constant? I mean, it detects whether the system breaks the time reversal symmetry.
Yeah. Okay. So this, that's where you have magnetic dark crazy. So because magnetic dark crazy, all these states here break time reversal symmetry. So that's the way people use it to detect it.
Okay, so what is the cancellation rule for the dipole
reason? Again?
The cancellation rule for the dipole reason.
Oh yeah, I will talk about it. It's actually if you apply it in the Miller plane, so you can cancel. You mean the cancellation when the right and the left, right?
Yes. That's
right. So the Arpes theory, actually, the angular photo emission theory, is, in some sense, is quite simple. So this is a Fermi-Gödel rule, which you have a dipole interaction between dipole interaction between photon and this electron. And so this Fermi-Gödel rule, and the nice thing about this Arpes, which has been proved showing that this so-called three-step approximation is kind of quite good. So this three-step approximation means the photon energy is very high, so you just come in, knock it out the electron, so this first step, and then the electron has to travel in the material, the second step, and the electron coming out, which reaches the detector, which you consider the third step. So these three steps sort of completely independent. And so in that kind of approximation, which you can write as the intensity of the electron by this formula. So basically it's proportional to a matrix element, okay, here, and times the imaginary part of the Green function in the material. And the edge here, so basically you have many parameters here. The one edge is means the light coming with is left circularized or right circularized. Okay. So of course you can linear polarize the matter. Also you have a spin. In principle, you can also measure the spin of the electron coming out. So that will be the spin you can measure in which direction, so respond to one direction. So you can measure omega and k. And the matrix element now become very simple, and it's become between the single particle initial state with the final state as this approximation. Okay.
What are the photon energies used for these
experiments? 21.6 like a keV.
keV.
Yeah, it's very high. I mean, they're different. The best one is the cyclotron source. So they, if you don't have this kind of equipment, you use a helium like source. It's like just one frequency. I remember the 21.1. It's very hot, so you knock electron very quick. It's not like infrared like this kind of thing. So in that case, we already talk about that. So due to the electric field and this spin orbital coupling, it's got a better curvature. Actually, so you lead it to the mixing between two bands. So actually the initial state here, when you apply electric field, is different from when you don't apply electric field. So here I wrote the matrix element between the difference between the you apply electric field and without applying electric field. So this difference is proportional to electric field, and at times this whatever is a single particle state in your material. And I just write down a function of the GK. And for different spin orbital coupling, you can calculate. And you can see that so this spin orbital coupling induce additional turn in this RPS. Matrix element, and it actually is directly proportional to the electric field. And since suppose we know all these spin orbital coupling, and we know the exactly the angle dependent of the this B vector, and also actually it also can be quite strong near the band crossing point. But the adiabatic approximation, of course, is break it down when you exactly the band crossing point. It requires the electric field to produce energy much less than the band gap. So you need to measure this, say, away from this band crossing point. So this new turn, so basic idea is that you have whatever you intensity you RPS measured, and you have two turns. So AK omega, the omega will determine which band you're going to access. Okay, so each band, which band you're going to access. So the spin orbital, due to the better curvature, is going to reflect in this, your matrix element in here. So this is the essential idea here. And the way it's going to measure it, actually, I'm going to define two quantities. So in general, if you can calculate everything, you can just put in a formula to calculate when you apply electric field without applying electric field. But in reality, I think the best way is to measure this dark closing effect. So just your question asked, so basically the D is the dark closing, which using a right circular polarized light, and minus the left circular polarized light, okay? And you also can measure the, if you can measure spin of the electron coming out, you can also measure the spin polarization, okay? So basically you measure the spin up minus the spin down. And both these two turns, when you have a Miller plane, so the idea is you have, suppose you have a material, you have a Miller plane in one direction, and your light coming along this Miller plane, so in this Miller plane, and now you reflect, knock the electron out. In that case, since this is a Miller plane, if you do not apply electric field, actually there's perfect symmetry. So then you using right and left circular polarized light, it should give you exactly the same. So the D and the P will be just equal zero. But now if you apply electric field, which is a perpendicular to the Miller plane, now you break the symmetry, so now this D and P is going to proportional to your electric field. And the formula is given here. So in principle, you can measure these, okay? So this is basically the turn. So if you have, if you know the band structure, the initial state of these wave functions, you can put a exact number to calculate. So the, how big is this Dirac-Lewis effect? So we estimated for the valence band for different semiconductors here. So the idea is that we want to get like 2% Dirac-Lewis effect, like ITC, which is so far the currently measured, able to measure it. And how big electric field you needed in order to do that. So we set the gap of splitting gap around like 20 MeV. So in that case, presumably the RPS can resolve these two bands easily. And so now in that case, you focus in the one band. Now the electric field, in order to produce this 2% effect, actually is not that small. So for the silicon, is 41 millimeter. So this is cannot be, this is too big actually for the for this kind of RPS experiment. And for germanium, for the last one, indium and tinumi, this one is reasonable, like 1.2 voltage. So it's reasonable, you can measure it. So now at this moment, I don't have data. So basically, Fumlai is working on this measurement in this Indian antonym. So just data just collected, I think, last week. So I don't know. So next time I will maybe report the data. So this is the basic idea to measure this better coverage. So this is my first. Any question? I'll go into a little bit more about this confined potential, about this part.
Somehow I missed the point about this electric field. What does it do to the band structure, or how should I think about the effect of the electric?
Usually, as electric field, you tune in the band, right? Tune in the band. Just you tune in the band.
Within the whole Brillouin zone.
Yeah. But here is because you're spin orbital coupling, so you have a spin orbital split. So you have spin orbital, so electric field, you're going to change your momentum, right? The momentum. So this
some Rushmore splitting or
like is there. You need just some spin orbital coupling. That's
so
the effect.
That still keeps the degeneracy at the gamma point.
Yeah, it still keeps it. So yeah.
Your estimation for the conduction band or
for valence band. The conduction band it's I don't know how big it is like. Yeah, this is for bulk. So it's you need actually, you cannot go too big to. So the actual experiment is quite hard. I mean, here if you see that, so epsilon is a gap between two bands, so splitting band. So the electric field actually needs a very big if you want you go too big, leaving from the gamma point. But also you cannot. Very close to the gamma point because it's the adiabatic approximation will not be invalid. So this there's only some range of these Fermi brain zone you can near the gamma point that you can access and you can measure.
Which k vectors do you have in mind with this formula? Because it must be at then.
So it's near the gamma point. Near the gamma point is like. You keep the like gap like 20 MeV. So here I use. So you have band splitting, right?
Yeah.
So you have a Fermi. You have some.
You assume some value of a Fermi wave vector, like.
Yeah. So the energy is like 20. The difference between the gap. this spin splitting gap is 20 MeV. So that's what I assumed. So in that case, 20 MeV, you suppose the RPS can resolve the difference between that upper band and the lower band. Yes.
The valence band, 20 MeV is already pretty large.
No, for this one it's not big. It has a very high gamma 1, gamma 2 is quite.
The curvature is so small in the valence band that in order to get these energies you need a fairly large. I just wonder what if I translate the Fermi wave factor into a density, what this corresponds to?
Fermi vector. Not for, here is not in the Fermi surface. We are not talking about, so you just need a material, which you have, for example, endoplasm, which you have electron in the conduction band. But we are accessing the valence band. The RPS, the nice thing of RPS is you can knock out any electron where you want.
You do this with an undoped sample, you mean?
Yeah, you can do it, not a p-dope, not at the Fermi surface. So that will be actually you can that will be dangerous actually because you have a current effect on the particle of the Fermi surface that will actually already break the time reverse. That could reach
any
yeah, 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 yeah,
yeah,
yeah. You can access inside the band. Yeah, so it's 20 MeV. Yeah, So the RPS, I didn't show the RPS data. RPS data, you can change the omega, right?
Yeah.
So omega, you go to, so you can look at the peaks, okay? So you can identify the peak, where it came from, which band you are, okay? So you should see two peaks, which like 20 MeV different or some moment. That's the way to access. It's not measuring at the Fermi surface. Measuring Fermi surface is actually makes all these things in that we is certainly another work. So here I just want to brief mention some calculation which is spin accumulation at the edges. So originally this experiment here down at Santa Barbara, which is a measure spin accumulation by the Kerr effect near the edges, and which has many contributions, which are possible contributions, like possible candidates, is extrinsic spin hole effect and intrinsic spin hole effect, which still kind of debating. But another thing I think also is important, actually, in that case, you need to consider the spin accumulation by just by the confined potential near the boundary. So if you have a material which you have a boundary here, and so you basically keep the electron in the side, so this confinement potential here also going to induce spin orbital coupling near the boundary. Okay? So that you can write down in this simple term. Okay? So in that case, you can think about it. If we I give the so this direction, let's say the vertical direction is the x direction, so you have px, you fix the momentum of the x, and for the spin down in the z spin in the z direction, for the spin up or spin down, you have a field of different potentials. So for the spin down, you feel like this. So there's a symmetry between this side, left and the right side. And for the spin up, you feel that way. So if you have a px go to minus px, of course these two reverses. And so if you don't apply electric field, of course there's no difference between, since px minus px is symmetric, so there's no difference. So you don't have the spin accumulation. But then if you apply electric field in this x direction, so you break px, go to minus px, so in that case, you also lead it to some spin polarization. and there are two edges. And there's also this is a numerical result, so this oscillation is in the bulk is due to the Fermi finite Fermi vector. So these things actually can be quite big. We estimate for different like confinement potential. So this one is just for the square confinement potential, and for the like for the more realistic, you put some kind of potential near the boundary, which has a finite decay. So that case, in fact, I mean, if you increase the spin of this potential big, actually, I mean, the total accumulation spin near the two edge is almost saturated after V go to 0.0 eV. So this is basically this is one of the. So one thing we consider is there's another group which also we finished the calculation, and they also tell me their calculation. So actually they also did a different technique. They were basically the same kind of physics. So we have spin, opposite spin accumulated near a different edge when you apply electric field or on the one direction. But so the thing here, the difference between the spin accumulation induced by the confinement potential or due to the spin Hall effect is that this mechanism here actually is very it's non-sensitive to the impurity in the bulk. So here we put it like this water in the bulk, quite a different disorder in the bulk. And you can see the spin accumulation is almost non-changed in many cases. And similarly, here also, and the calculator here, also the spin accumulation due to this mechanism for the different different impurity strengths. And in fact, at the beginning, you can see that there's no change for the spin accumulation near the two edges. But for the like Rochefer spin orbital coupling system, in fact, we know the this intrinsic spin Hall effect, or this intrinsic spin Hall effect, has a very large dependence on your disorder strength, actually. So this is also a numerical calculation which show if you increase the disorder, it's immediately suppressed of spin accumulation at the edge. So using this kind of disorder, actually, you can separate whether the spin accumulation near the edge is due to the spin Hall effect or just due to the potential near the boundary. So actually you can see the magnitude on these two effects is almost equivalent. So that's the story about this simple calculation. Yeah?
I think, just clarifying question. So the first calculation was that you have accumulation even without spin Hall?
Yeah, it was without spin Hall, even you have.
Physical picture,
right? Yeah, I just showed you. So you have a boundary, right? So you have a boundary, so you have if you have a boundary potential here, right? Opposite. So you induce a spin orbital coupling near the boundary here. Okay.
What kind of spin orientation do you expect?
The spin is this is Z direction. This is your material in Y direction, and this is X direction, which say is a translational invariant. And so now you have confined potential like this, right? So you will induce a spin orbital coupling near the two edges, okay? So this is this term, derivative of the V1, right?
I have a question.
Yeah.
Suppose now you also consider there's a like Rochebach type interaction in the Borg.
Yeah, in the Borg, yeah.
So then you got two contributions, right?
Yeah,
so
but that will be in the Borg.
The
yeah.
same sign or opposite sign? And does the sign agree with David
Ostrom? Yeah, the sign actually agrees with.
David Ostrom.
Yeah, yeah. The sign actually agrees.
Another way to say it is that in the Rochebach system, in the Borg, you
have yeah. Yeah, so when you measure spin accumulation, you
so
need to be careful.
If you feel that the boundary rotates, the spin accumulation rotates with it.
Yeah.
And gets a fitted Z component.
Yeah. Z component, for the spin hole effect.
Yes.
Yeah.
Small effect, but
yeah,
it's
yeah.
nothing but the rotated
yeah.
in plane.
Yeah. But here is basically, say, you have this confinement potential, you have, because the confinement potential here is this way, here that way,
but
give
you
a difference.
Same effect for the spin-independent confinement potential as well. Because you're rotating this way, or you're rotating in this way.
For the without spin-orbital coupling.
No, with all orbits. With all
spin-orbital. In the ball, say the, what's the question again? Say.
Just the spin-independent confinement potential will give you the same effect.
Spin-independent confinement potential. So just have a Vy?
Isn't that
yeah.
No, that will not.
I don't understand the question. So, I mean, he didn't have a very simple confinement potential.
Yeah.
He's only adding in that because there's a, in addition to the intrinsic electric field, now we have a boundary electric field.
Yeah.
And then,
but
this is a magnitude. Yeah, so this is a magnitude. Of course, you require, like what I said, if you have eight NeV boundary, okay? It's produced reasonable large. If you have eight EV boundary, so let's say the potential.
I would expect that the mechanism that produces this field is similar to the field that you get, say, in any type of inversion layer, which is essentially also a field produced at the boundary of the material. So in that sense, I would expect that the magnitude of the field is the same.
Magnetic field, yeah,
in
maybe.
Any other inversion layer at the surface. The order of magnitude, I would expect.
Not really, it really depends on how you do this. For instance,
yeah.
you have a create-aged wire, or you have really gain control wire, I think the magnitude could be way off.
But in fact,
for the inversion layer, you do not need the gain to get the effect.
Because that really depends, I mean, this is an effective model, but that really depends on how you come.
Yeah, you have it depends on you confine.
You can really
yeah.
have this gamma osmotic background with this intrinsic internal electric field, but then gate it with a very smooth profile. So this effect would be negligibly small.
Yeah.
Or you can really have a hard boundary
yeah.
in absence to back.
Here I need an 8 MeV boundary. So what I said.
Yeah.
This is what I said.
The order of magnitude I expect
cannot be bigger, but yeah,
yeah.
should be yeah.
The same,
yeah.
Yeah,
it's similar. So
this is
exactly.
Okay, yeah. But you also have inversion layers that don't give you anything, or yeah, I just.
Yeah. I realize that. I didn't say this is the mechanism to explain the experiment. I just say when you say you measure using spin accumulation at a boundary to measure spin hole effect, you have to be careful. To consider this effect. So that's all what I said. I don't say this is a mechanism to explain the phenomenology. That's kind of dangerous. People will jump.
Excuse me, did you add some spin relaxation curve on the boundary?
No, actually, we didn't put too much spin relaxation.
I see the Hamiltonian is kind of also
invariant. No, so the Px, so when you apply electric field, right? So Px minus Px, the Fermi surface gets different. Px minus Px is different.
Go back to the slide you showed
me. Yeah. So if you have Px, right, fix it, let's say.
Yeah, yes. But still,
Yeah, eventually, of course, you'll put it away. But the thing is, like, let's say I look px minus px. Okay, first I put it px positive. Okay, so for the spin up, I feel this way. For spin down, feel the other way. So if I put a minus px, okay, then of course these two reverse. So if you have symmetry between px and minus px, there's no spin accumulation. But now you break px, yeah. Explicitly, yeah. So in some sense, it breaks down well. It's by the current, let's say.
So in your calculation of the disorder effect, so what kind of quantity is take the average of the disorder with respect to average?
So you just average the disorder potential.
Yeah, and the quantity.
You put more disorder.
So for example, you can also take the disorder average for the spin hole conductivity or polarization itself.
Polarization. Yeah. So here is actually you just
physically sound way to take the average of the disorder.
Yeah, thank you. It's basically it's a numerical calculation. So you just simulate, put a more impurity in the material, and it's basically no difference between the early days to the calculate here by some they also use secant. Okay.
So when you accumulate a certain amount of spin, if your gradient is sharp, then it's accumulated. So it's always accumulated where
Yes, but you have a relaxation mechanism, of course. You will go to the bulk a little bit. That will depend on the diffusion length. So you think.
No, I just thought that maybe there is some statement that the number of spins which are polarized is somehow independent of the gradient. Small gradient in large region where you have a very small density, but
That's possible. So here actually is quite localized on the near the boundary. So in fact, in the Santa Barbara experiment, you see some oscillation, like this spin coming out. Yeah. Yeah.
And so, if the boundary is sharp enough, then probably only the strength of the delta function would be important.
Yeah.
Instead of the shape of the delta function. So that would be your guess.
Yeah, we estimate two different, just square. We want it like more smooth. So the smooth potential actually, we see the saturation. You have put it like 8 EV, then you increase the boundary, then you see an increase of spin accumulation. Okay. We need a boundary around like 8 in the confined potential.
Nothing is here.
So actually, if you have like 2 EV, like something like that, so there's two different extents.
It means it's a real simple question because it also depends on the range over which the change takes place.
So the thing actually, the alkaline, yeah, alkaline, yeah,
yeah.
So alkaline is that actually a little less than the experimental we're seeing. Yeah, but we use like this kind of effect. So V, okay, V is whatever you have, okay. The difference of the V, 2 EV, 8 EV. No, it's there, 2 EV, 8 EV.
No, no, I want a number in MEV for the effective spin orbit.
No. Oh, spin orbit interaction.
So this is basically the spin orbit interaction with the envelope, which is usually orders of magnitude smaller than the spin interaction with the block function, because the distance scales are so much larger, and so the gradients are so much smaller.
Oh, so yeah, so we...
What's the order of magnitude of that term in Hamiltonian in MEV?
Let me see how big it is. Here, we're actually quite short. We not go too
for
much.
Realistic, yeah. What is it in MEV?
I forgot. It's possible, yeah. It's possible. I didn't estimate. Yeah, so this is, okay, I need to,
it's not
I need to go to that number.
Sure, it's not clear if it should, because this involves only spin orbit coupling
well,
to the envelope.
Well, I mean,
the
realistic, there's a feedback.
There's a feedback, but it ultimately comes from the microscopic spin orbit.
Yeah,
there's there's no microscopic
that's
spin orbit
not in
coupling.
Here.
That's right. So my question is, what is that term? In
how big is it?
Yeah,
yeah. Okay, I can remember.
You. Well, then how can you calculate anything?
No, you calculate, I mean, from here you can calculate, right? If we assume
that's
the,
that's absorbing the strength and the potential.
Yeah, but, I mean,
you're not calculating it.
It's hard to...
it's a rather fundamental thing, though. I mean, you know what the spin-orbit coupling is in bulk materials.
Yeah.
You know, it's on the order of minimum of tens of MeV up to hundreds of MeV. This is going to be orders of magnitude.
100 to MeV.
Normally, the
difference is here, you know. So, yeah, I mean, you can have a very, very big spin orbit in the bulk, right? So the spin hole effect actually, in some sense, does not proportional to your spin, how big your spin orbital coupling is. It's actually independent on your spin orbital coupling parameter. For the intrinsic part.
Well, it's ultimately coming from that.
No, but it's a result.
Ultimately, it really comes from that. If you had zero, if you had ideal, some fictional material with zero spin orbit coupling, you get no spin hole effect.
Yeah, there's no spin hole effect, of course.
Okay.
But if you're very big, actually, you know, the result is just like constant. You never, you know, as soon as you think the electric field is much smaller than the spin orbital coupling strength, okay, then actually you got a kind of universal, basically universal. Constant for the spin conductance.
Well, there's a competition of energy scales, and the energy scales seem vastly different. So it doesn't.
What's the microscopic picture you have in mind? This back potential is coming from the spin.
No, so this is just confined. You confine the electron, right? You have a boundary.
So this is the spin orbit coupling to the envelope part of the wave function.
Envelope part of the wave function, yeah.
Yes.
You say quite a small.
The gradients of the envelope part of the wave function are orders of magnitude smaller than the gradients of the block functions.
But the thing here, one thing I think here is, because this is directly coupled to sigma z. No. So,
right.
So the spin polarization actually is a direct effect on the c direction.
Mm-hmm.
So the Rochefort.
Yeah. So I've got an electron, and it's coupled to this relativistic effect, a magnetic field that's produced by the relativistic effects. And there are two of them. There's one from the wave function. There's a block function.
It's actually a coupling goes to the wave and back to the, even though you're just talking about conduction.
Right.
It's related to what happened in the waves. But here you're really talking, the spin polarization is only happening in the conduction band.
Yeah, so it's
so
because
it's
small. It
doesn't get suppressed by the energy denominator, but energy
but also not enhanced.
Yeah, but it's also down by orders of magnitude. So that's a huge effect. There's a huge disparity in the energy scales.
Yeah, but the spin accumulation does not exactly depends on your energy scale. That's the thing.
Everything depends on energy scales.
But the spin orbital coupling does.
Yeah, but if you Rochefort, it's a coupled to the plane, right? It's spin coupled to the plane.
That's because the conduction ultimately has coupled to the P light.
Right.
The atomic part, it's only the
PI
part has
this thing. Yeah, I'd
not to say. Back to the conduction band it's the atomic part.
Yeah,
it's
the
atomic part.
The radius of the atomic part is huge, which is why
it's
large. His comment is that your skin, the feedback of your skin accumulation is only back to the envelope part of the conduction band. It's nothing to do with the atomic. So it's actually different from Rochefort, the origin.
Right. Yeah, the origin is very different. But
yes, the origin is very
different. But I'm confused about why this is even comparable in size.
But
people completely ignore this.
Yeah, most people completely ignore
this. Because it's so small. So that's why I asked, what's the energy scale? Because you want to do is convince people that actually this isn't, virtual black holes affecting the spin or something. Something that's kind of, it's completely off the scale.
No, this is the thing, what I consider here is big because this thing actually directly affects your sigma z. So
is the atomic part. They all affect sigma z.
No, in the Rochefort case, actually, spin hole effect is kind of what you
it's
actually...
It's mixing with the valence band because the conduction band states are not true eigenstates. I mean, it's just a fiction that you think about a spin and an S-like conduction band state.
Yeah, but...
poor choice of basis, but in fact, it really has the valence band character mixed in, and that's where Rochefort comes from.
Yeah, I'm not talking about the Rochefort effect that comes from. I'm talking about how the spin hole effect is induced by the Rochefort term. The Rochefort actually couples the spin in the plane. It's not a directly coupled spin in the z direction.
Yeah, but that's...
But so you have need another mechanism.
I'm not talking about the direction. I'm talking about the magnitude.
So we are talking about a spin accumulation induced which mechanism.
I'm talking about the magnitude.
Yeah, so you are talking about energy. I say the energy may be not direct related to spin accumulation in z direction. You know, there's two separate mechanisms you have to consider.
Well, in a limit that dv dy goes to zero, this goes away, right?
Yeah, for this one goes
so
away.
Limit that the
well, this one is perfectly, you say you are right, it depends on the stress.
Yeah.
But for the Rochefort case, which say, my point is, you compare the strength of spin orbital coupling for this compared to Rochefort turn, is not fair competition. We are competing the spin accumulation. Okay, so that's a fair competition. But of course, it's a concern about how big this can. But this thing is actually what I think is direct effect on sigma z. So that's what. It's a good question.
So what's probably means in the setup. So you apply electric field.
Yeah.
And you, that's it, right?
Yeah, you apply electric field, but you need a, so you have a Miller plane here.
Yeah, I mean, what the setup is just a bulk of the electric field in the major backwards and that's it.
Yeah. No time to rest in
between.
So you, it's actually a break is a refraction symmetry. Right, E electric field you apply you break is a refraction symmetry, right?
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, if you have a Miller plane, then it's certainly true.